Hello and welcome to Bright Wings, children's books to make the heart soar. I am your host, Charity Hill. The purpose of this conversation is to help mothers and fathers identify books that will liberate their children to embrace truth, goodness, and beauty. In this episode, we're discussing the beautifully human word resilience. And to talk about this, I've invited Tricia Galvin. Tricia was born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago by Philippine immigrant parents. And already we know that Tricia's story is one of resilience. She received her Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology at DePaul University and her Master of Arts degree in Clinical Counseling at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. She married in 2008 and since then has had 8 children. She's worked at several different agencies. She's worked in the Employee Assistance Program, Gamblers Addiction Helpline, the National Runaway Helpline. She's worked at Catholic Charities as a therapist, and she was a therapeutic case manager at an agency called the Harbor Inc., which worked with homeless teen girls between the ages of 14 and 21, and she'd help them move on from the program, as well as from the Department of Children and Family Services, in order to live independently. Right now, Tricia is working as a therapist in her own private practice called Divine Mercy Counseling, PLLC, based out of Austin, Texas, but she works with and is licensed in both Texas and in Illinois as counselor. It's Tricia's intention to ground her work in a whole person perspective in terms of healing, and specifically focuses on wounds from the past. She grounds her work in attachment style perspective. She's especially interested and works with clients who want to integrate their faith into their therapeutic experience. She works mostly with young adults and adults, as well as some teens and some couples. Hello, Tricia. Welcome to Bright Wings. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Charity. It's great to be here.
Tricia is going to be talking with us about the value of resilience, what it is, how to look for it in our families, some ways to practice it. And then later on in the podcast, I'll be sharing with you some books that will help you nourish this quality in your family. Tricia, resilience is a really trendy word right now. Can you tell us about it? Can you tell us what does resilience mean?
So the definition is, I guess we could start with, is the ability to recover quickly from difficulties, which basically means the ability to bounce back. If you kind of think of, it's funny, my kids just recorded this squishy ball bouncing on the floor, and they did like a slow motion video of it. So if you think of bouncing back, where the ball kind of hits the floor, it gets pretty flat there. And then it slowly, it opens up again into its original shape. And that's kind of where we can kind of think of resiliency, in that sometimes we hit a wall, and then quickly, is what this definition says, quickly we get back into our original shape. And that's where that kind of comes from, even in physics.
What are some of things that you would identify as being part of this bouncing back? How do you become resilient? Maybe is the first question before we ask, how do we help our children to be resilient?
Well, basically, I think there are some characteristics, and they've done a lot of research on this. I mean, you'll see it everywhere. Just in this season, how to do it in like self-help books. I'll just give you kind of a few characteristics here that we're seeing. There's this idea of optimism. And so kind of thinking positively in the face of adversity or struggles or pain. There's this other ability to face fear. Sometimes we can kind of recoil back when we are fearful, and that sometimes stops us from facing our struggles. In a way, we end up distracting ourselves with other things, like, you know, watching Netflix or doing something other than facing our struggles, some very serious issues. Or in terms of mental illness, of course, if we're feeling depressed or anxious, if we've been through trauma or something like that, it is fearful to kind of be vulnerable and face those things. And so in resilience, we're seeing that facing that head on, whether it's in therapy or even being vulnerable in our relationships about how we are actually feeling, that's a strong characteristic of resiliency. Other things, there's religion, there's social support, role models, things like that. So basically staying in community and in relationship with others.
Gosh, say more about that, because I think so many of us have faced a lot of isolation this year. Our children have faced a lot of, you know, they're deprived of a lot of sociability. How does community, how do friendships play a role in resilience in this bouncing back?
What I'm seeing, it kind of leaves us stagnation, like we're stagnant when we're not in relationship, because we're only really communicating with ourselves or with the people in our household. We learn a lot more about ourselves when we're in relationships with people that are not like us, or, you know, don't think the way that we think. Of course, we can always learn from each other. We even learn a lot from our children, humble ourselves in that way. And so we were made really for relationship. And so when we don't do that, it kind of leaves us stagnant there.
I really agree in this perspective that we're really made for relationship. Like that the other one who is outside of me is actually already inside of me. They're already ingredient to me. When I don't have contact with the other, then I'm poor. I was meeting with a study group of some women last night, and we were all agreeing that we need each other in order to see ourselves. It's like, in a certain sense, when we look at each other's faces, we're looking in a mirror. Like they help me to recognize who I am. Like they see things in me that I don't see. They see more of me or different dimensions of me. They tell me there's another way to see my circumstances. You know, they open me to different possibilities. I can really see how that would be part of resilience. I also think it's interesting too that you mentioned, did you say seeing things positively? Like there's times, of course, when you just can't see things positively. And so I would be able to guess that community is really a part of being able to see things differently and positively and with possibility, actually, seeing, rather than despair.
Yeah, I did. I mentioned optimism.
Optimism.
Yes, we do. We kind of get caught up in our negative thoughts or negative emotions, and we forget that when we're social or when we meet with friends or relatives, that if we are vulnerable in that way, they can kind of bring us out of that and tell us kind of our strengths and the good things they see in us, just like you mentioned. And in that way, they bring us out of that kind of sadness. We have to kind of have a belief in our deep relationships, deep and intimate relationships, that they care about us, you know, and that they're there to kind of tell us the truth. And that's where it gets, you know, therapeutically, I try to build a deep relationship with my clients so that they can end up trusting me. And in that way, they believe what I say when I bring out things that are optimistic or positive about them, the more we get to know each other. And I think that can happen in, you know, regular day-to-day relationships as well, if we're vulnerable and able to commit to like a deeper friendship with one another.
Yes. I wonder if I find hope a more interesting word than optimism. Do you think those are basically the same?
I would say so.
I think hope's maybe a richer word. The reason why I was asking is because I feel like optimism, like you're either optimistic or you're not. Like you're either born, shifted one way or another. And so if I'm not optimistic, like good luck for me. But I feel like even if I'm not optimistic, I can be hopeful.
Yes. These words I would say are coming out of research. And so,
yeah. So they're a term, I guess.
Yeah. However, they're kind of researching it and how they kind of put that into their research is kind of what that word comes out of.
But interesting. Okay.
Yes. In terms of hope, I would say that's really, it's a feeling, you know, it's kind of a knowing that things are going to get better in our spirit somehow, that hope comes out.
Can I ask you regarding hope? Mm-hmm. One thing I'm thinking about related to children's literature is the stories that we tell within our family. The story trajectory, right? I was doing okay. I really hit this difficult situation. And then I came out of it and I'm better now. Or our ancestor, you know, our two generations ago, they set out and they did this difficult thing and it was very hard. But in the end, look what has happened to our family. Like, because of them, look at all the goodness that has followed from their struggle. Right. From our immigration, from being a pioneer, whatever your family's story is. And I wonder too, like, if what role storytelling plays, the stories that you've told about yourself, the stories that you hear clients talk about of their own history, what role that plays in whether they can have hope.
Yes. Yes. That's beautiful. I would say that that's why this is so important. I think in storytelling, we get examples of how our family has faced adversity. And so when we get examples of that, whether it is from our parents or older generations or coming from storybooks, that has to just be part of the fabric of our existence. It just has to exist. And if it doesn't, then it's a little bit harder to bounce back because you're not seeing or hearing or feeling stories that bring you, like you said, hope. And sometimes
things can be different. I've survived this, or someone in my family has survived something like this. Things can be different. I can move on. I can be changed.
Yes, it does. It brings hope. And I think in the therapeutic relationship, when people come to me, they're looking for a sense of hope. And sometimes they forget kind of the examples they've seen in their family, or they haven't seen it, or that part is missing, to kind of get to a place where they can experience that themselves. That's where we go back to say, let's face our fear. Let's find hope in our own life, even currently. Like, what kind of things can you face? What are you worried about right now that you can try something new, approach it differently, and see if you will survive, basically. See if you will get through that adversity. And they learn a lot. They learn a lot about themselves if they face that fear, go through even a current struggle, and find a different result. And so I think that's what we kind of do in the therapeutic room. And when they go back out into their community to try different things and experience new stories.
Tricia, what else is important in being able to practice resilience?
Well, I think in working with clients, a lot of times they're going through or processing some things that happened in their past, whether it has to do with trauma or abuse, you know, difficult childhood experiences, things like that. And there's kind of a sense where they kind of have to figure things out, understand it, and kind of accept that things have happened. And in that way, they kind of have to come to a place of forgiveness and kind of gratitude. Because through that adversity or through those struggles, they learn a lot more about themselves. It makes them stronger. There is that idea that if we suffer, we grow stronger, that we kind of look back at difficulties, and in that way, being grateful for some of those struggles. It does take some time, but I do think they do have to end up forgiving in order to heal. And so that's where I come from when I work with them.
If you don't forgive, you're only punishing yourself.
Exactly, yes.
It's amazing to me that you're asking so much of your clients. I guess the point is to get to the root of the wound so that there can be this bouncing back that we're talking about, this resilience.
There are a lot of wounds in that, I would say. There are a lot of wounds. When they're going and processing through some of those things. And part of the healing is to forgive. So.
Okay. One thing this conversation has helped me to name is that resilience isn't a thing that you either have or don't have. It's a practice. So people talk about the practice. You're practicing of yoga. Like, in my practice of yoga, I blah, blah, blah. But resilience isn't like an object you either have or not have. It's not an emotion that you either feel or not feel. It's a practice. right? Resilience is a practice, and there, or it's like kind of a blanket word for a lot of different practices. Mm-hmm. How do you help your children? How would you encourage me to help my children be resilient?
Yes, I think just naturally children are resilient at the start. You know, huh. I think as we get older, the more we learn about the world, the harder it is to be resilient. And that's where the practicing comes in. I would encourage in those moments of natural resiliency that we're seeing in our kids, you know, they're able to kind of bounce back sometimes in struggles or even in small things, I would say, like if something they built broke and they go back and they rebuild it, we can kind of notice that and say something like, great job trying again, you know,
yes.
Little tiny moments of bringing it back to, let me start over and it's okay, is beautiful. And we have to point that out where they're doing great in that, where they have strength in that. Sometimes we don't notice it. And I think that that's kind of where it gets disconnected. We're not paying attention or we don't see it. And then it kind of gets taken for granted, that strength in our children.
Wonderful. Tricia, do you have any final comments that you want to make? Any aspects of resilience you want to mention?
Well, I think there are some things that storybooks do that I'm sure you're going to recommend some, but in general, I think that children, and this is what kind of we work on when we try to heal some past wounds in childhood and therapy, that some of the ideas are these, that you're being seen and that you're being known, that you kind of feel there's a feeling of safety and security as a child, because that can connect to how we feel as we get older. Also, parents can kind of give our children a sense of being comforted and reassured. And I think that goes in past toddlerhood into the middle school age, which I feel like once they become a little bit more independent, there is where some of these things actually have to be more prominent. Being seen, feeling safe emotionally and psychologically, and being comforted. I think that we are hoping that they already know all of this because we did it when they were little, but they do have to be reminded, is what I'm seeing in my clients. By the time they reach teenage age or their 20s, I think that's kind of where we kind of disconnect as parents when we leave them to see how they do, because we did enough when they were kids. But the truth is, I think we still have to be there. We have to be present and give them this chance to feel these things. Love basically comes from love.
Right. In middle school, I just think how much I wanted to be known and loved, seen and recognized, you know, at 12.
Exactly.
How it's important to return to that, circle back to that with those children. That's so great to hear. I hear that affirmed kind of professionally. Well, Tricia, thank you very much for being on Bright Wings and taking the time to have this conversation. It's been wonderful and interesting.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're a gift to your community.
Thank you, Charity. Same to you.
Some of the dimensions of resilience that you would find if you wanted to research resilience are: resilience includes connection, so relationships. It includes wellness, healthy thinking, and meaning. Resilience, insofar as connection is important, we heard from Tricia how she had to say about how important relationships are for giving us a different idea about ourselves and about our circumstances. I was intrigued to notice too, as I looked into what different dimensions of resilience there are, I was intrigued to find out that wellness was important, because stress can be physical and not simply emotional. If I think stress, I associate emotion, I associate mind. I'm not thinking body, but we need to think body. I know I do. I need to remember I'm a body. And instinctively, I think we know that when our children are all like physically cramped up, that creates physical stress and they literally need to open up, get out, and move their bodies. You can fact check me on this. It would be really exciting to know more, but I have looked into briefly some studies that talk about how just being outside lowers your blood pressure, lowers your cortisol, and makes you feel better. There's a wonderful, quirky little book about forest bathing I'll feature in the book list. Forest bathing is not synonymous with skinny dipping. In fact, forest bathing means being immersed in the forest, taking time, being quiet, and how healing and restorative it is to kind of go out into the woods and immerse yourself in nature. As corny as it sounds, the book made me want to do it. Okay, back to some more dimensions of resilience. Healthy thinking involves practicing gratitude or meditation, prayer, mindfulness. It can involve acceptance, changes in perspective, the use of visualization, learning from the past, either yours or your family's history. And this is where telling stories can be so important, I think. And hearing stories gives our children a way to imagine that things can be different, that there's meaning behind suffering, that there's meaning behind difficulty. There's possibility built into adversity that helps us to think about ourselves in these ways. And then the last aspect of resilience I wanted to mention in more detail was meaning. So what small action today can I take to move toward a goal? What small action can my child take today to move toward a goal? Can I give or help another? These actions can help us feel more connected. And we know often that in giving, we receive. How often that paradox is true. We know it, and it's a good thing to keep experimenting with that when we don't feel like it, when we're not feeling very bouncy, not very resilient. These are things we can do. At this point in the podcast, I want to turn to an examination of a number of picture books and novels. I want to turn to these as illustrations of the practice of resilience. Especially, I want to point out that in each of these stories, there's a really important role played by community, played by family, played by relationships. Let's remember what we talked about in episode 8, right? One of the things that we've established is how the characters that we read about get inside of us. So we notice, hey, here's a character who is struggling. Here's a character who's suffering some adversity. I'm suffering some adversity. Hey, we're alike. Oh, look, this character grew through this adversity. This character, actually, their life had a happy ending in the end. This is what makes stories so important. We need to be telling stories in our families, and we need to be reading stories that instigate hope. So stories of resilience are stories where the narrative ends in hope. Ends in gratitude, ends in growth. So your child can say, this is my story. I want that, and I can believe in that. One of my favorite tales from growing up of all time, and I didn't know it was a story about resilience, is a tale that comes out of the Jewish folklore tradition. I'll give you two different stories that basically have the same root plot. I'll give you two different titles. The first is called The Cow in the House by Harriet Ziefert. A more beautifully and a slightly more complicated telling is called It Could Always Be Worse by Margot Zemeck. These stories have the same basic plot structure. A husband and a wife are in a house that's too small. In some tales, they have tons of kids and the house is small and everyone is bickering and not getting along and they're struggling with each other and the size of their house and the demands of life. And the man goes to talk to the village wise man, and the wise man tells him to bring his animals into the house. Sometimes in the telling, he brings the animals in one at a time, and the household gets progressively more disorderly and crazy. In some tellings, he brings them in all at once. At any rate, kids love that part. I know I sure did. It's super funny. The main point is he fills up his house to bursting and it gets really crazy. And then the man really is about ready to go mad. And he goes back to the wise man and he says, things have just gotten totally worse. And the wise man says, in the story that I read growing up, called A Cow in the House by Mabel Watts. The wise man has him take the animals out one by one, and the man gets progressively happier and happier, and his wife gets happier and happier, and they feel like they have more and more room the more animals are extracted from their house. So I've already mentioned three different versions of this same plotline, and they're wonderful. They're really wonderful. You can also find the same plot structure online for free if you want to look it up, learn it yourself, and tell it by the fire to your children or as a bedtime story. In my family growing up, we continued to reference this basic storybook. It was part of our family's great books program, if you will, within our family. We would say, you know, if we got a big piece of furniture moved out of the house or some big problem was solved, we would say, oh, it was like a cow in the house. And so this phrase, a cow in the house, was this reminder to be mindful of what your current life blessings are. Another couple of favorites from growing up are two by William Steig, stories of resilience in which, in the end, all comes right. It's Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, and a big favorite, Dr. DeSoto. These two, in the end, are a little bit lighthearted, but they still show us that, in the end, what really matters are the people who love us, our family that surrounds us. We're going to triumph over fear and danger. A much more serious story about resilience is a book I love called A Chair for My Mother by Vera Williams. A little girl and her mother and her grandmother are saving and saving all the extra change that they can in a big, huge jar because they don't have a comfortable chair to sit on, not even a couch. And they're saving up for a big, comfy chair, a beautiful chair, something that her mom, who's a waitress, can rest in at the end of her shift, somewhere where the grandmother can take a load off. Why don't they have a chair like this? Well, we find out that they lost everything in a fire. Where they're living now, they have been given all the furniture by family and friends and neighbors. There was really this outpouring of kindness. The grandmother makes a speech when they are accepting all these gifts as they're moving into their new apartment. A bed frame, some cooking utensils, some dishes, a lamp, pots and pans, silverware. The grandmother makes a little speech and she says, it's just almost unbearably brave. She says, "You are all the kindest people and we thank you very, very much. It's lucky we're young and can start all over." What grandmother do you know would have that attitude? And so this story about saving up their money for this special chair is a story about resilience. It's a story about recovering. It's a story about community and the role community and family play in making you feel able and capable. The role that family and community and hard work and sticking together play in recovering from disaster. Somehow when they buy that chair, you just feel like everything is finally right in their world. They're going to be okay. They're going to be able to rest. There's a longer picture book called The Rag Coat by Lauren Mills. It's told in a very simple way. It's a very deeply emotional story without being one bit sentimental. A young girl loses her father, who's a coal miner. She was supposed to go to school, but now they don't have enough money to give her a coat. She can't go to school because she can't start to school because she doesn't want to start something she can't finish. When all the mothers get together to quilt, they ask Mina, the girl, why she's not in school. And they discover that she's missing a coat. And they all decide to quilt her a winter coat. So Mina goes to school, starts asking so many questions and growing enormously. She's just full of joy to be learning and being with the other children. The cold weather comes and Mina's coat is finally ready. It's all bits and pieces, all quilted together. But when she wears it to school, the children circle around her and start yelling rag bag at her. And she runs away from them into the woods and she cries and she sits there and thinks about things. Her new sadness is caught up in her old sadness at her father's death. And when she's thinking about him, she remembers something that his love gave to her. She says, I could almost hear him say, Mina, people only need people and nothing else. Don't you forget that. And then she does something so unbelievably resilient It's because of all the love that has been poured into her by her papa and her mama and by those quilting mothers who poured so much into her coat. She stands up and she walks back to the schoolhouse. And then, because it's her day for show and tell, she tells each of the kids the story of the scraps that they contributed from their families to her coat. So in her one coat are all the stories of her community. She says, "Look, Shane, here's that blanket of yours your mama received the night you were born. The midwife said you wouldn't live but 3 days because you were so small. But your mama wrapped you up tight in that blanket and put you in a little box by the wood stove. And your papa kept the fire all night for 3 weeks. Of course you lived all right," I said, looking up at Shane. Shane was big. "And you hung on to that blanket for years till it was nothing but shreds." Whew, I'm about ready to cry and I'm just reading the story to you. She tells each of them their own stories and how their story has literally become a part of her story. One of the children says, "Mina, I sure am sorry we ever said anything bad about your coat." "Me too," I heard the others murmur. "I wouldn't blame you if you didn't let us touch it," Lottie said. "Friends share," I said, and I let each of them touch their rag. Then I showed them the feed sack inside my coat and told them how it made me feel my papa's arms again. One of the children says, "Mina, you must have the warmest coat in the whole school." And she responds with, "Well, it took a whole lot of people to make it warm." And we all laughed. Now that is about how community makes us able. That is how community makes us resilient and helps us to keep going and to have hope. I'll finish talking about picture books with something a little bit more lighthearted called The Fire Cat by Esther Averill. You can get it in a longer version, but I also think there's a shorter I can read version. It's about a mischievous yellow cat named Pickles, with a little cat with big paws. He's a bit of a mischievous cat until a couple of human beings who believe in him give him some mentoring and some coaching and help him and believe in him and give him some big things to do with his big paws. He becomes a really good cat. But he needed somebody to help him use his powers for good. As for longer novels, middle grade fiction works, I'm going to talk about Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry, Little Britches by Ralph Moody, and Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz Ryan. Call It Courage, I just read for the first time because I'm on a bit of a Newbery winter kick right now. And I was really amazed. In Call It Courage, Mufatu is a young man who has seen his mother die in the sea and is terrified of the ocean. The Polynesian people of his tribe and as well as his father all reject him for this. They feel his father feels a great deal of shame towards him because of his son's lack of courage. One day Mufatu is blown off course by a storm and lands on an island and has to figure out a way to get home again. He has to exert himself again and again against his fears, and he gradually overcomes them. In one sense, this is a book about how sometimes the community's idea of who we are can limit our growth. In another sense, Mufatu never moves beyond a sense of community. The sense of community is always informing what he should do with his tools, how he should survive on this island, how he should build himself a canoe, the valuable things he wants to bring back to prove to the community that he has overcome his fear, that he's grown into being a man that they can value and respect. It's a wonderful book about confronting one's fears as the path toward growth. And boy, does he do some scary things. Sharks, boars, octopus, cannibals are after him at one point. I'd say it would be a really inspiring book for probably 10 years old and up. All right, our next middle grade fiction book on resilience is Little Britches by Ralph Moody. It's a story of what happens to Ralph when the family moves out west due to his father's poor health. Ralph is constantly learning, constantly figuring things out all along the way, all along in their new life out west. From how to ride a horse, to how to herd cattle, to how to get along at school. Actually, on that note, if you don't want your kids reading about schoolyard fights, this might not be a good book for you. But if you can kind of keep it in a historical context, it's a great book about resilience. We find out Ralph learns all these amazing skills and works really hard as a kid. Everything that Ralph has learned along the way since they came out west prepares him for the end of the story. At the end of the story, his father actually dies, and Ralph has to become the man of the family. It's really sad, and yet at the same time, it's not a hopeless ending, because of all that Ralph has gone through, you know that he can do this. You know that it's possible for him to take on this next responsibility. There are a few more books in the series, which I haven't read. Now, in Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz-Ryan, fortunes start high in the story and then take a dip. This is actually thematic in the story. High, then low, then high. It's something the main character Esperanza meditates on with her grandmother. When the story opens, Esperanza is a privileged girl living on a ranch in Mexico. Her father is killed and there's a reversal of fortunes. She and her mother, together with Hortensia, the housekeeper, who's married to the head of the field workers, the boss, and their son, Miguel, they all flee to California, where Esperanza now has to work for a living, work really hard. And at first, she's too proud to even ask how to sweep a floor. But she can't hesitate. She has to learn, and she learns, and she works really hard. She struggles with bitterness and hope. She overcomes pride and a sense of distance through friendship, through hard work together with others, and a sense of belonging, a shared destiny with her family members and the people in her community. They even share a sense of injustice and confusion as to what the workers in California should do during the Depression. As the title might lead you to believe, hope is rising. And at the end of the book, we also discover that it is the author's family that she is writing about. She's writing about, I believe, her grandmother's story. What's wonderful is that it's a story about someone who's lost everything, and yet at the end of the book, she has a new life, a different life, but she's not lost. She knows who she is, and she knows what's important. And I think we need to be doing this in our families. So I have a little bit of a call to action for you. I want to see if you can get together with your children. Pour yourself something nice to drink, gather around the fireplace or a fire in the yard. Fire is so good for telling stories. And this is what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that you and your spouse will tell your children a story about resilience, either something from your own life or something from your family's history. I'm going to try to do this myself on Friday nights. Our kids always want to hear us tell stories about our lives and about our family history, and I think we probably don't take enough time to tell our family's stories. And I know these things can really shape who we think we are. When we know where we've come from, when we know the kind of people we come from, when we know the kind of stories we come from, that shapes our identity. This can be a huge encouragement to your children. Friday night, family story night. I'm going to give it a try. I hope it'll also help my children to reflect on their own experience. It'll help them learn to frame their own story. I'm really hoping that at some point they start telling me their stories. So we'll see. I'm going to try to make this a new thing, a new tradition, once a week on Friday nights. Hopefully by the time you listen to this, I will have done this a few times with my family. I'm going to try to keep it simple, not build it up too much, just a little bit of fireplace time, something nice to drink, and a couple of stories before bed. I think it's the kind of thing that even young teenagers might sit around and be able to listen to. And they're the ones who should be able to contribute also. After all, that's what teenagers do best, right? They overcome adversity. They're going through that storm and stress. They've got tales to tell. I would love to know how it goes. You can message me at Bright Wings Children's Books on Instagram, or you can email me at brightwingschildrensbooks@gmail.com. If you really do sit around and tell these tales, I would love to hear how that goes. I'll have a book list related to this podcast posted at the website. If you purchase books through there, I get a certain percentage of the sale of the book. The other lovely thing about buying a book through my book links is that you're supporting independent bookstores. Thank you, my dears, for listening. Keep bouncing. This podcast on resilience is especially dedicated to Amanda and Terry Knapp and their family, and Jeff and Bridget Dunbar and their family.